It's Friday, February 14th, 2025. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm the host and producer, Michael Welch. This program is the product of a collaborative effort between the Center for Research on Globalization that funds the show and radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, the Ininu, the Ojibwe, the Dene, and the Dakotas, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. Our program this week focuses on the failures of the major corporate and state media to responsibly do reporting on foreign policy. The media coverage, far from taking an oppositional framework, actually sides with the state's desire for war, and even enables it to the detriment of the public and certainly the people in the foreign land being targeted. We start the show with an interview with Yusuf Omar, the former CNN war correspondent who has found an original and exciting way of energizing Palestinian people to tell their own stories via Scene TV Palestine. He will be talking about this new form of community journalism and about the screening of grassroots efforts taking place across Canada and the United States. Yusuf is followed by Ramzi Zeid, a Palestinian-Canadian activist living in Winnipeg and talking about the weekly demonstrations and other work he has been part of over the last year and a half. Finally, we speak to two Canadian peace activists, Tamara Lawrence and Glenn Michaelchuk, speaking about examples of journalistic failures from a peace perspective and what needs to be communicated to avoid more war. This week's edition also takes place during the Fund Drive edition of Global Research NewsHour. CKUW is a campus community radio station that gets its funds not from corporate advertising or funding from the state or even the university. It depends on a fee on the tuition of every student, but it also depends on donations from listeners like you to secure the fees, salaries, and resources needed for putting our community's diverse programming over the airwaves into your bedroom, your car, or even your cable television. So the program was taped live and is plagued to some extent by appeals for funding. However, you are listening to this program. Please understand it is necessary to appeal for funds once a year, and hopefully you will share in the commitment to truth-telling by making a pledge to the station and to Global Research NewsHour. We start with casual banter with my radio colleague Ted Turner here on the Global Research NewsHour.
Community access piece is so vital. The people making programs here are not, you don't need to get your journalism degree and come in here and get hired and get interviewed by 10 people looking at how well do you add to our brand or meet our requirements to report back to some governing body about meeting some other requirements about our messaging and all the, it's you come in here and if you're passionate about it, And you have something to say that is thoughtful, that is considering this community, that is going to contribute to dialogue in this community, to the betterment of this community's knowledge and education, then this is the place for you. So that is absolutely unique. This model isn't going to change. We're not going to announce that we're becoming an all-sports talk station. It's never going to happen. But in order for us to maintain that promise to you, we need your pledge of support.
Pledge now at 204-774-6877. This is all you have to do, and you should do it now. Don't wait. Don't put it off. Put it in. Put that money in. There's plenty to go. Plenty of it you can free up.
Okay. Michael, I'm going to hand it over to you. So we're pushing towards, we're going to start to be moving towards $26,000.
Okay.
We need to get to 30 in order to get to 60. We do this thing in increments, and it's a beautiful thing. We do it with your donation, one donation at a time. We need to get to that $60,000 over the next week, Michael. When you start getting into week number two, Yeah. You've got less time than when you were in week number one,
so,
Michael.
Yeah, so give us a hand. I mean, get those donations in now, and so we don't feel like, oh, I don't know if we're going to make it. We're doing okay, and thanks for everyone who's donated so far. But for those of you who are still hanging out for a little while, you know, I think now's the time to get it in. 204-774-6877 or go to fundrive.ckuw.ca. Okay, so it's now past 1 o'clock.
It's you.
And yeah, so this is it's a different sounding show, actually, because we're doing it live. I usually do it pre-recorded, but this time I'm doing it live, and I think it's going to be great. So I've got a whole bunch of guests in store for later today. So I'm going to get that going. So yeah, I on my show we are looking at the different looks, looking at different shows having to do with war and on Gaza. There's an interesting event coming up later tonight. Actually, it's a part of seven screenings in seven different cities across the country, actually Canada and the United States, and it has to do with the people who are in Gaza, because you know in Gaza there's been such a tremendous loss of life, and so we've got these shows that are going to be actually presenting these are from people in Gaza risking their lives, and they're making these films, and it's going to appear here in Winnipeg tonight at 7. So I actually contacted a fellow by the name of Yusuf Omar, who's going to be appearing. He's traveling to each of these shows, and he's actually one of the organizers of the Scene TV Palestine. So why don't we have a listen to him, and we'll be back shortly. So thanks. And by the way, in case you missed it, it's Fun Drive. Call 204-774-6877. So here is Yusuf Omar. You are a former journalist from CNN, and you founded Scene TV, and are approaching journalism from a more citizen or community-based approach. Am I right about that?
Yeah, exactly. I believe that everybody has a story to tell, and they often don't know how to tell their story, and that's how we help them.
Okay, well, can you tell us a little bit about your unique mode of citizen storytelling and what it is about it that communicates about Gaza or about any place in a unique way, as opposed to the, I guess, more technologically advanced cameras and film editing and microphones and so on that we're used to in the mainstream news?
Yes, as you described, I used to work at CNN International, and before that, I was a war journalist and foreign correspondent. I traveled all over the world telling stories, and what I realized is that traditional media lacks diversity, and one of the reasons for that is because of their labor-intensive and expensive news-gathering processes. They're very limited in the scope of the amount of story that they can tell and have access to. Their newsrooms also tend to lack diversity. A very particular kind of individual makes their way into those jobs and those positions, which means that they are often incapable of reporting on our globally interconnected and very diverse world. We had a very different way of telling stories. Our idea was, what if you trained marginalized communities on the ground how to tell stories with their mobile phones, but you still had a layer of journalists fact-checking, verifying, producing, editing that content, and aggregating it into journalism shows? And that's exactly what we've done. We've ended up creating over 10 viral shows, 7.5 million subscribers. We've published over 5,000 stories now from citizens around the world.
So in your work that you're doing, training people in photojournalism and filmmakers, I mean, is this new mode, expanding community journalism exponentially?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of user-generated content and citizen journalism is nothing new. We've seen, you know, CNN had iReport back in the day, and the idea of people submitting content with their phones is been a pretty common thing since as early as kind of 2010, 2011, around the Arab Spring. I think what's different now is not just scraping the internet for the next viral video, which I don't think has that much value, but in fact, working with an individual who has no experience telling their story, who remains unseen and unheard, and giving them the skills to tell their story. Because, Michael, I think what we realize is most people don't know how to tell their story. They don't know how to open their story, how to structure it, how to tell it in a sequential way, how to tell it in a visual way for a video medium. And that's the kind of opportunity that there is to fill.
I noticed in mainstream media, because, I mean, we're a community radio station, too, so in a way, we're kind of on the same page here. But in mainstream, just to have access as a journalist, having access, they seem to be different ways. You're supporting imperial projects, supporting capitalism, supporting Zionism, and then if you don't, you know, get all those things ticked, you're just not going to have access. And I think with this work, it seems like you're shrinking the distance between the reporter on the scene, or the witness at home, and the people consuming it, with all of these middle managers messing up what people are seeing. That's
an accurate description. I mean, I think there is certainly an important role for editorial decision making, fact checking, verification, and a lot of the things that are being put in place, those Zeds, if you will, in a workflow, were implemented for good reason, but at the same time, those measures tend to filter the news that you have access to, limit the information you have access to, and often we end up losing a sense of reality. The more polished it is, the more contrived it becomes. And this opportunity to hear directly from the source, directly from voices on the ground in Gaza or Sudan or South Africa, is really what people are searching for. And getting access to those voices is more valuable now than it ever has been.
Okay, so now there are seven cities in Canada and the United States where these films are being broadcast. But you're going to be, I guess, appearing in all seven of them, correct?
Yeah. I'm traveling all the way from Australia, landed here in North America today, and very excited to travel across Canada for the first time ever. Films, we're in Winnipeg on the 14th, Calgary 15th, Ottawa 16th, and Toronto on the 17th. I think Canada represents a really unique environment to be bringing these films to. There's been a lot of hostility, for lack of a better word, from very strong voices in the Zionist community who have gone out of their way to suppress protests, suppress voices. It feels like the politically correct response for a Canadian right now experiencing or witnessing what has been called a genocide, the politically correct response is to do nothing and say nothing. And I think that's why it's so important to bring these films out there and really expose people to the realities on the ground.
I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, because I mean, there are a couple of centers, like there are lots of different cities in Canada. Did you have anyone that resisted for whatever reason, or did all of the cities that you reached out to say, yeah, come on down?
No, I mean, for example, we wanted to visit Montreal. Was one of the cities that we had aspired to bring the film to, and we had been advised by local partners that it was potentially too risky at this stage, and there may be too much counter protest for that to be a viable option. We've also done stories on Canadians who have been attacked on the street simply for wearing a Palestinian T-shirt or holding a flag. So I think there are some quite unique circumstances now that are taking place in Canada. And in some respects, it feels a little bit further behind from the rest of the world. I mean, if you go to Europe and many other parts of the world across the African continent, the mainstream view has really been very pro-Palestinian, and I'm not sure if that trend has emerged yet in Canada, but I hope to come out there this week and see it for myself.
Okay. Now, talking about your content, I mean, I'm familiar with one of the filmmakers, Bisan Auda. She actually won an Emmy for her work, and she stays in Gaza. You know, she strikes me as kind of like a modern day Anne Frank. You know, like documenting the genocide in real time. Only with this technology, she can do more than write a diary and then it's exposed after she passes on, that sort of thing. Can you talk more about Bisan and also about Ahmad Alive, the journalists and the films we'll be seeing during this tour?
Yeah, I mean, these are some of the most brave journalists in the world, right? I mean, more journalists have been killed in Gaza over the last just over a year and a half now than at any recorded time in recent history through any conflict. They really are being systematically targeted. And on top of that, no international journalists have been allowed into Gaza to report on the truth because Israel have barred them. So we rely on voices like Ahmed and Bisan. And I think Bisan is especially such a unique character in that so many journalists have had to, those that have survived, have often had to flee for their lives to neighboring Egypt. But Bisan feels the need to stick around, to document the truth, to risk her own life on a daily basis. And this is really what we see in this film. We see her documentation, real-time documentation of the genocide of her people. Her greatest fear, as she says in the film, is that she goes through all of this and risks her life only for nobody to watch and nobody to act. And we have to do everything in our power to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, journalism is very important, and I understand, like, according to the Palestine Journalism Syndicate, at least 200 journalists have been killed since October 7th, 2023 in Gaza. I mean, so the makers of the films people are going to see are putting their lives on the line to tell the
definitely,
truth.
Definitely, definitely.
And pictures. In your view, are journalists there being killed as collateral damage, so to speak, or are they deliberately being targeted by the Israeli military?
You know, it's very difficult to get any evidence, given the fact that Israel have barred independent organizations, investigations, or journalists from entering. But it would appear that journalists are being targeted. It would appear that their families are being targeted too. And we look at the casualties and death. And I mean, it's very consistent with Israel's overall policy, right? They have systematically dehumanized and demonized the Palestinian population to manufacture consent for their actions on the ground. And barring international journalists from entering is another form of doing that. And of course, the targeting of journalists, it would appear to be happening. We have seen multiple instances of people in press vests who have been killed. I mean, even long before October 7th, journalist Shirin Abu Akhle was killed by a sniper. So the idea of Palestinian journalists being targeted is nothing new, and it's long before October 7th.
Yeah. Now, I imagine that a lot of viewers already understand that Israel is committing acts of genocide, annihilation, crimes against humanity. I mean, you're preaching to the choir, I would think. So could you talk about what these films offer that, you know, at least as far as it's filmed so far, anything that actually shocks or surprises even the converted?
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides to that. One, we really do try to invite people from the other side of the internet to see this content. That's a really big focus for us. And it has happened. We've had many Zionists come and they've left crying and often donating. And it's been remarkable to see how stories can change somebody's perspective. The second thing I'd say is for those that are, as you say, the converted, we often see a glimpse into somebody's life. We see a little moment under the rubble or somebody in anguish. But for the most part, Palestinian stories and voices have not been humanized to the same extent or degree that we do with Israelis, for example, right? You hear their whole stories and their lives and their dogs' names. And I think that's what these films allow for. They really provide that more beyond the rubble, that sense of depth and backstory and lived experience into somebody's life. And I think that that's a far more dignified storytelling experience, and it makes you connect with them on a far deeper level.
So in a nutshell, Yusuf, when you stack up the journalisms of people like Bissan and Ahmad up against that of the mainstream media, what is it that most powerfully comes across?
I think sometimes when people watch journalists like Bissan or Ahmed, the difference between them and traditional media is traditional media gives the false premise of objectivity, of neutrality. With these storytellers, they don't for a moment pretend to be objective or neutral or down the middle. They are highly subjective. They are highly opinionated. Their lived experience is the story that they're reporting on. They're not just reporting on some other people being massacred. They're reporting on their own people and their own families and their own homes being bombed. And I think that people often may disregard that as, well, that's not journalism. That's a matter of opinion. And I disagree with that. I think journalism is the closest version of the truth, and they are living that truth. So I think that's the difference, the biggest difference overall.
Yusuf Omar, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. I understand you've got your screening tonight in Long Beach, California. You're screening it there on Thursday, and I look forward to meeting you tomorrow night, Friday, in Winnipeg. And
likewise. I've never been in such a cold place in my entire life, so I'm bracing for your guys' weather.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Okay, that was Yusuf Omar, is going to be presiding at the event tonight, is the Winnipeg night, and here with me to discuss that and other issues related to the ongoing Israel-Palestine situation is Ramzi Zeid, who's the president of the Canadian-Palestinian Association of Manitoba. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you having me today.
Yeah, it's been, well, I know you've had a lot of, let's say, I think almost from the start, you had these weekly demonstrations, you know, in the hot summer, the cold weather, including this time. And the numbers seem to be holding out quite well. And you've situated it at different locations each time, you know. How would you say that's going?
Absolutely. We've had them every week since the start of the conflict. The support that we're getting in Winnipeg is truly remarkable and very amazing. People are coming out week after week. Does it matter if it's minus 40 or it's plus 40? People are still coming out. It just goes to show you that the people of Winnipeg are very resilient and brave.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it seems like, there are other locations across the country. Is it pretty much the same standard, or is there anything particular about Winnipeg?
No, absolutely. No? I mean, I think the only thing that's particular about Winnipeg is the weather, right? So
yeah.
We do get, like I said, minus 40, and you throw the windshield in there, and it's colder. So
yeah.
I really do appreciate and love the people of Winnipeg for coming out week after week and supporting.
Yeah, I remember you had it wasn't part of the Saturday demonstration. There was one at the Human Rights Museum, and you rolled out the names of people like 0 to 1 who had died. I mean, and these people who weren't even alive when the October 7th attacks happened, and it was like a huge number.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that in itself kind of, you know, caught me off guard. Wow, like that's so many.
Sure, it goes to show you the children that are innocent, that have nothing to do with the conflict, that are being targeted and killed, is truly unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are people who are you know sensitive to the Israeli. The deaths of Israelis on October 7th. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're 1 and 2, you know, maybe children, and that's certainly a tragedy.
Anytime children are killed, it doesn't matter where, it's a tragedy.
Yeah, but the thing is, yeah, I mean, it seems like they're emphasizing so much has happened to Israel, a tragedy, but like there's a huge number of people that, like, yeah, they matter too, but it's like they're invisible or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's over, I think it's 20,000 children already that have been killed that are just innocent, you know, that had their whole futures ahead of them that that have been killed. Or if they haven't been killed, they've, you know, lost a leg or an arm. And if they haven't lost any limbs, they're going to be traumatized for the rest of their lives. So
yeah. I mean, we hear so much about the anti-Semitism that's being expressed. But it seems to me that Palestinians are Semites as well.
And absolutely.
I don't think that's what we mean when we're talking about anti-Semitism. They actually say Islamophobia, I think, is that...
Well, they're saying Islamophobia, but people forget that there's many Palestinian Christians also. So it's anti-Palestinian racism that's there.
And
you're exactly right. Palestinians are Semites.
Mm.
So...
Yeah. When Trump, President Trump, stood side by side with Benjamin Netanyahu earlier this week and announced that they were going to they were going to move a whole bunch of Palestinians to places in Egypt and Jordan on the grounds that, well, it's such a horrible place, they're all shot up and there's rubble everywhere, and it's they kind of tried to frame it as a, you know, an errand of mercy.
Mm-hmm.
But all the while standing next to the guy who's, you know, the guy who's responsible for shooting them up. I mean,
I think they're both responsible, right? I mean, not President Trump, but just, you know, the United States of America in general, right? The president before him now, they're the ones sending over the weapons, the ammunition, the funding to fund this war.
Yeah, they're complicit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, did it strike you, like, as a Palestinian or your fellow Palestinians, you know, what kind of conversations had you had about that?
Obviously, it shocked us all. President Trump is in no position at all to be saying anything that he's saying right now. Palestinians are living in Palestine, and that's where they're going to stay.
Yeah.
We don't need to go to Egypt. We don't need to go to Jordan. We have a homeland, and we want to stay in our homeland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of focus on Gaza. We don't hear so much about the West Bank, you know, mm-hmm. and there's been a lot of... You know, horrors taking place there. Do you just want to share, some of the more significant tragedies happening
absolutely.
There?
Especially in right now in Jenin, there's people being killed. There's houses and buildings being bombed. The number of Palestinian hostages that have been released have been, you know, almost the equivalent amount have been arrested in Jenin already. Mm. So. And they're arresting them without charges, without trial. It's almost like they're collecting hostages just in case they need to release more. It's, they're just arresting people to arrest people.
Yeah. I mean, they talked about during about 20-some years ago arresting people like, you know, willy-nilly. I mean, no process and putting basically innocent Afghanis in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is this the same sort of situation that the West Bank... residents are...
Sure, they're just collecting bodies, and they don't, indiscriminate of age.
Uh-huh.
There's, you know, children that are as young as 10 years old that are being arrested.
Man. So, what, in terms of the work that you've been doing and other people in the community of Winnipeg have doing, I mean, could you maybe comment on some of the rewards and some of the, I guess, the challenges?
Well, I mean, obviously the challenges are quite a few. It's no secret that the more that we speak out, the more pushback we get. There's a lot of people that do want to speak out also, but there's every time somebody speaks out, somebody gets suspended from school or somebody gets fired from their employment. So people are really afraid to speak up, and it's because the don't want to say the other side, but the Israeli community is using things like, well, I donate this much to this university, so if you don't censor this, I'm not going to give you a donation. And a lot of these establishments rely on these donations, so they're using, their funding to do that, or their money. People want to express themselves at their workplaces, and they're not allowed to. Meanwhile, when the conflict in Ukraine happened, people were expressing themselves freely, and there was no pushback at all.
Mm.
So you're seeing a kind of a double standard. At the same time, though, we are getting a lot of support from people that I never thought would be supportive. Some of them are doing it very quietly because, they are afraid because of their employment or their colleagues. But everybody is working in their own way, right? You don't have to come out to a rally every week. There's many emails being sent out. There's people doing things, behind the scenes that I don't really want to talk about too much because I don't want to give them up, or I don't want to give away what the big plan of thing is. But there are a lot of people working behind the scenes that I would never thought of would be working.
Interesting. We're just running close to the end of our time. Just one question. I know that we remember Folklorama every year. You have all of the communities, the ethnic people in the community coming together and demonstrating. I noticed that Israel was the only of all the Middle Eastern people, because we have a lot of Middle Eastern food and stuff in mm-hmm. in Winnipeg, and yet the only Middle Eastern country represented was Israel.
Well, there's Egypt also.
Egypt? Well, Egypt, okay, North African.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know, but so that's... But I mean, I think you were trying to apply for Palestinian...
So we are working on that, and... It's okay. There's nothing official yet.
Okay.
I mean, we are hoping to get something going, right?
Okay.
It's no secret that Folklorama needs a lot of work. It needs a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
So we are trying to organize ourselves that, hopefully one day in the future we are able to get a pavilion within Folklorama. We are really trying hard to do it. So keep your eyes and ears open, and hopefully you'll see something soon.
Okay. So just to clarify the place and time of the event tonight.
It's at the RBC Convention Center, 7 p.m. tonight. There are still a few tickets left. Like I said, it's quickly selling out. I think maybe 30 or 40 tickets left over for tonight.
Yeah.
So if you want to come, this is truly a once-in-a-lifetime type event. All the proceeds from tonight will go to help the people in Palestine and in Gaza, and to support the people from CNTV to encourage them to do more things like this.
Okay. Ramzi Zeid, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it.
So, we're getting it to the we're already at the halfway point. So if you haven't, you could call now at 204-774-6877, or you can reach our volunteer line at fundrive.ckuw.ca and make a pledge to keep our station going and floating, and all the different forms of journalism that people like Bissan and Ahmad are doing. We cherish that, and we want to see all sorts of different angles on it. And we're going to have a discussion a little bit later with some people in the peace community who are saying, well, the mainstream media isn't necessarily giving you the whole story, so to speak. So do that now, 204-774-6877, and make your pledge. And so we'll be back shortly, so don't go away.
Local music. Local issues. Local voices. It's all here on CKUW every day of the year. Now, during Fund Drive, we need your support. Call 204-774-6877 or go to fundrive.ckuw.ca to pledge now.
We
CKW's annual fundraising celebration, Fund Drive, is on air now. This is our once-a-year effort to raise money for operations and improvements at the station. Go to fundrive.ckw.ca to pledge online or call 204-774-6877 between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. to make a pledge. As a thank you for gifts over $35, donors can opt for special Fund Drive incentives. Donate now at fundrive.ckw.ca. Fund Drive runs from February the 7th to the 21st. It's an opportunity for you to help us help you get the radio you love. Don't wait. Pledge today at fundrive.ckw.ca.
We go. Okay. Tamara Lawrence and Glenn Michaelchuk, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me, Mike.
Glenn, you can you hear me okay? I see you're
still
okay. Well, yeah, it's so we're now going to be talking about the situation in terms of a lot of the issues around war and peace, and how a lot of what we do in the anti-war movement is really about correcting the record, the media record, on the on what's happening. For example, you think about the Gulf of Tonkin incident way back in the 1960s, and how it never actually happened, but it was used as a way of getting people to, getting all revved up and entering the war. I remember more recently in 1991 when the Iraqis were. The soldiers apparently supposedly they were ripping babies out of incubators and throwing them on the floor, so that was the major issues they had there, and it never happened. Okay, so you know, and then you go on, you know, into the present. I guess I have to ask, you know, both of you, if you have any thoughts about. Some of the current flaws or gaps in reality that's allowing the war or upcoming wars to be perpetrated or boosted. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, Michael, if I can jump in, I want to just, you know, completely agree with you that the media manufactures consent for war, really puts together a narrative to make it more palpable to the public to support war. And I think about what Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, said, that all wars start with media lies. And in January of 2022, I filed a formal complaint to CBC for its terrible coverage in the escalating crisis in Ukraine. And, you know, I said that CBC is beating the drums of war by not telling the whole story about what was happening. And then I also just want to mention that in December of 2021, January of 2022, February of 2022, before Russia invaded, the Canadian peace movement was really mobilizing hard, calling on our government to de-escalate, use diplomacy, not push NATO expansion, accept neutrality for Ukraine. And if the government had done that, you know, we wouldn't have had a war. And so many people's lives wouldn't have been destroyed. The country of Ukraine is just absolutely destroyed. And it's really because of the West and because of NATO and because of the media not telling the truth about what was going on. So that the media absolutely has a role in in starting wars, in prolonging them, and the CBC really needs to be called to account.
Okay. Glenn Michael Chuck here with Peace Alliance Winnipeg. Do you have anything further you'd like to add?
Oh.
So, Glenn, are you muted or? Oh. Yeah, Glenn, you're muted. Glenn, can you hear me? Okay. So you're here, and yet I.
Ask him to rejoin.
Maybe you could just rejoin again, because I see you on the screen, but we can't get you quite clear that well. So maybe I'll give you a chance to come back tomorrow. Maybe I'll complete where we're going. I know that we had the last time we spoke, you talked about the threat of nuclear war. You actually started a petition in October of 2024, and you were about to present. You collected a number of signatures. You were about to present it on January 6th, when that was the very day that they prorogued Parliament. So I don't know if you're. There's Glenn. We'll get with you in a second, Glenn. But yeah, I find that there's been so little discussion. It seems to me, because the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists now estimate it's 89 seconds to midnight for the doomsday clock. You know, we're closer than ever before, and yet I don't hear any kind of alarm about this, like the kind that you and the Voice of Women for Peace have been raising. Could you talk about that? Like, I mean, if your petition is going to be submitted at any point, or what kind of plans you have around that?
Well, with Parliament being prorogued right now, the member of Parliament who was sponsoring our petition isn't able to introduce it in the House, but we continue to work on nuclear disarmament. You know, we are sending a delegation to New York in March to support the efforts that are being made worldwide to, you know, advance the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. But Canada's continued membership in NATO, a nuclear armed military alliance, is impeding our efforts for disarmament. And the other thing is that the risk of nuclear weapons continues to be very, very high. And that is because of this ongoing war in Ukraine that hopefully will end, but it is still raging. This is really a NATO proxy war using Ukraine to weaken Russia. Russia being the second largest nuclear armed state. But the other thing that people really need to appreciate is that the Americans are preparing for war with China. They are. Listen carefully to the statements that are made. Look carefully at the defense planning documents, and they're preparing for war with China, which is also a nuclear armed state. So the situation remains extremely, extremely dangerous and precarious. We need to build a big peace movement in this country to put disarmament and peace in the center of Canadian foreign policy, because it's been hijacked by the United States, by NATO, our defense partnership, and NORAD, and it's up to the people to turn it around and, like I said, have a foreign policy based on peace and disarmament and working cooperatively with all countries in the world.
Okay, so Glenn Michael Chuck is here, I think, anyway, and I know that you've been head of the Peace Alliance Winnipeg now for almost two decades, and I think you must have seen quite a lot of this whole business of how the truth is over here, but this is the messages that's coming out in the mainstream media. Could you comment on some of the more significant failures with regard to the wars, whether it's the war in Ukraine or the war in Gaza or anywhere else? And, you know, and their divergence from the message we're getting in the mainstream media.
Right. Can you hear me now, Mike?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. So when I joined on the computer It said I was unmuted, but anyhow, I'm now on my phone, and it's good to talk to you. It's good to talk to Tamara again. So on the question of the media, I mean, I heard Tamara's opening comments on that. I mean, she's precisely right, that the media is, in fact, part of what facilitates these wars that are being waged. And I would have to say that even some commentators have noted that now it's not only just a military-industrial complex that people face, but that the media is part of that whole military-industrial complex to suppress any kind of real discussion on that. And if we take the question of Ukraine, that has been particularly evident of how the media has suppressed discussion about the war in Ukraine, why it happened. Could it have been avoided? Totally suppressed in the media. With the Gaza situation, it's perhaps even there we've seen that the media has tried to underplay the question of Gaza in the Canadian mainstream media I'm talking about. So this is completely what we have seen at other periods around other wars. It was the same with the question of Libya. It was the same with Iran, I think, as you Iraq, I should say, as you mentioned in your opening comments. So one of the big problems facing the people is not only to develop their movement, but to find a way to get that word out. But I think countering this, the immense increase in the capabilities of the internet and so on, and of alternate media to get that a discussion going about these issues has been something that has changed over the decades that I've been involved in the peace movement. So while in the, say, the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, you were totally reliant on trying to get a message through the mainstream media, that's no longer the case. There is numerous commentators, numerous blogs, numerous shows that people can tune in and find different information, find the information that is, shall we say, truthful or more to the accuracy of what's happening. And I think that's made a big difference. And even though there's been this overwhelming censorship around the question of Ukraine, it is clear that certain concepts have broken through. The question of it being a NATO proxy war. It's so much so that the one of the Canadian government's websites has to address this as, well, if people are telling you it's a NATO proxy war, it's really just a Russian-sponsored disinformation campaign. So I think there's one advantage is that the growth of the alternative media has greatly assisted people trying to figure out what's going on. But it is still a huge problem. And I think it's a great discredit to the journalists who work in these media that none of them raise these questions or are so constrained that they can't raise these questions. And so not only do we need to, I think, have the peace movement be built, but a democratic movement around the question of journalism and raising journalism to the standard that it should be. And there are people who are doing that. There is, example is CKUW, but there are others. That's a very local example. But nationally, there's some very good media being done by organizations such as the Maple and so on.
Yeah, well, just to follow up on that, Glenn, I mean, we're having our fundraising drive right now, and I just want to tell our listeners that, I mean, yes, we're doing our very best to get a more balanced picture and to correct some of the premise and look really carefully at what's being said and what's not being said. So please phone 204-774-6877 or even donate online fundrive.ckuw.ca and you can make your pledge to, you know, this, you know, shining a bright light and actually expanding the picture of what's being said. So I know that back in November there was a parliamentary assembly of NATO in Montreal. And it's interesting that the press talked about the anti-NATO demonstrations, and there was a talk of Prime Minister Trudeau was talking about acts of anti-Semitism, intimidation, and violence. although a number of protesters reported being attacked by police themselves. And I mean, I wonder to what extent this has to do with the peace demonstrations. And there are a lot of them, but I don't think they get covered to that extent. I mean, could you talk about the NATO demonstrations in this point? Because I don't really hear any messaging really about the anti-NATO front that's really respected. It's all you're either pro-NATO or you're pro-NATO. Tamara?
Yes. So let me say that the Canadian peace movement, the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network, the two big women's organizations, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Canada, and the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace, we all have a definitive position that we want Canada out of NATO. We see NATO as a U.S.-led, nuclear-armed war machine that has caused so much devastation and damage around the world, from destroying Yugoslavia, the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, you know, and now Ukraine. And so this is why the parliamentarians from the NATO countries who met in Montreal in November were met with our protest on the street. And, you know, we are calling for the abolition of NATO. The other thing that it's important to understand is that NATO backed this genocide in Gaza. All of the NATO countries provided weapons to Israel for this genocide. In fact, 5 days after the Hamas attack, it was the Israeli Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant, that did a briefing to the NATO allies, because Israel has an office in the NATO headquarters. They've had that office there since 2016, and the NATO Secretary General said Israel is a vital ally to the alliance in the Middle East, and we are going to help Israel. And they coordinated mass weapons sales to Israel, you know, for this genocide. So that is why Palestinian activists were shoulder to shoulder with us on the streets, condemning NATO. And it's really important to understand this. And it doesn't have anything to do with anti-Semitism. It has to do with a foreign policy based on extreme violence and a foreign policy that is, you know, fueled by continuous weapon sales. This is why we're hearing now the U.S. call on allies to increase military spending. For what? To buy more weapon systems. So it is really urgent for Canadians to join the peace movement, to work with us, to call on the Canadian government to get out of NATO. No way should we be increasing military spending. We need to start investing in a green care economy.
Yeah, and I guess that's something you'll be taking into the next federal election, making it a major issue.
Yes, Michael, if I can say, we are planning right now to have Canada out of NATO as one of our top demands in the next federal election. And we are really going to try to bring public visibility about this issue, because it's absolutely essential for our well-being, for our sovereignty, for our children's future, that we do not have military spending going through the roof and continuing to participate and fund wars all around the world. This is why it's essential for us to work together to bring down NATO.
Okay. Glenn Michalczyk, we only have a couple of minutes left, so sorry about that. But do you have anything to add with regard to the situation with the NATO and, the kind of the lack of presence of peace activists like yourself and Tamara in mainstream media?
Yeah, so just on the question of NATO, Tamara sent around a link, several links, and one of them was to a press interview given by the NATO Secretary General recently. And in it, he talks about how NATO has to be, first of all, he responds to one question about saying NATO has to be more lethal than it already is, if you can believe that. And then he tries to frame this all very much, the question of the increased spending that's being demanded of the governments of NATO nations to keep 1 billion people safe. And he says, the reason to do this is because we have to look at what China and Russia are doing. And he quotes some figures about what China and Russia are doing. But the real question is, why are China and Russia doing this? Mm. And whose response are they doing this to? And they are doing this in response to NATO. They are doing this to the very overt threats that they are facing from NATO, and in China's case, from the United States in the Pacific region. So the way to peace and security in the world is not through armaments and making organizations such as NATO the dominant ways that peace and security are maintained, which is false, but is through the cooperation of nations and nations working together. And that's not what's happening, and that's what NATO is so destructive of.
Okay. Glenn Michael Chuck at Tomorrow Lawrence, I really appreciate you coming on my show and talking about these very cutting issues. This is really one of the main issues that we are addressing on the Global Research News Hour. So if you know anything you could do to we'd like to help each other. So thanks and take care, and we'll talk again at some later point.
Thanks very much for having us, and support independent media like CKUW.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. So definitely, I'm going to ask you to phone 204-774-6877 right now. You can get yourself a T-shirt at the $75 level if you go for the incentives, or you could even go at a higher level. You could go to $180. I believe we've got we're almost out of time now, but I should point out you can always get an incentive, a tax incentive, so that if you want to donate to, because you want to feel like you're part of our community and you want to feel like you're doing something that's going to extend to other people within the broader community. You may not necessarily like every issue that we cover, but at least you'll know that this is a different voice. And some of the things they're saying make a lot of sense. So phone 204-774-6877. I'd like to thank a few people. Sarah donated $35. Thank you, Sarah. There's Mary Jane, who donated $50. And Allison donated $95.9. So for that, you get the toque. So, thank you very much. And then at the another $35 level from Diane. So thanks all of you, but we need to jack up the price a little bit better. I think we're at $25,362. We got to get a lot more money if we're going to pay for all of our different everything that takes place here. So thank you very much. We're going to close now with a little bit of Billy Bragg. And then we're going to go into the next program. So thank you so much, everyone, and take care.
I was a miner, I was a docker, I was a railwayman between the wars. I raised a family. Time of austerity with sweat at the boundary between